got lots of information in this world. Some thoughts now on a world awash in information. There it is. The information all around us can be thought of as a kind of a blast of white noise. Featureless at first, but then as you wander around in it, you begin to hear things. Distinct? Meaningful? Continue to navigate, and suddenly there are some sounds you recognize. There we go. Yeah. Whoa. Hey, wait a minute. Am I on fire? If you're in a car right now and are hearing this, you might look around for an emergency vehicle, but you would be wrong. Figuring out how to respond to this siren noise coming out of your radio, coming out of the white noise analogy of our world awash in news and information, that couldn't be more connected to the headlines. Follow me here. Say that the information instead of a siren was the 20 or so unusual flu-like deaths in Mexico reported 2 weeks ago. Is that a siren off in the distance, or is it just around the corner? Or is it a sound effect coming out of your radio? Not relevant. Stephen Johnson joins us now to pick up the thread here. He wrote a book about an epidemic in a different era called The Ghost Map, the story of London's most terrifying epidemic and how it changed cities, science, and the modern world. He's also the founder of a website called Outside In, which aggregates hyper-local journalism from around the country. Stephen Johnson, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Hyper-local information is often a dangerous thing. Compare this sort of signal-to-noise problem with the kind of overwhelming reaction to the swine flu reports that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is crucial to understand what happened with swine flu is that you see both the kind of the incredible benefits of this connected information age and then the downside of it, that we have this ability now to detect a pattern in deaths in Mexico City, that these were, you know, unusually healthy people who were dying, although there were just 20 of them. And that news then gets broadcast around the world to the people who need to know about it, the Centers for Disease Control and health organizations all around the world, so that they can track it. So we have this enormous asset and the ability to jump on something like this and start looking for it and detecting the pattern of its transmission. The other side of it, though, of course, is that we all hear about it as well. I mean, and so suddenly what is still a very early, you know, affair, I mean, you know, an early kind of breaking kind of epidemic becomes this global media event. And it necessarily ends up terrifying us more than probably it needs to at that stage.
But it appears as though news consumers prefer to navigate the raw white noise of information. They would rather feel as though they're getting an advance notice on things. And I remember working in television, the editors and the sort of managing editors at the cable news places that I worked at always wanted breaking news. Everything is breaking news. Always. There's a hot story of the day, whether there was any news or not. So it seems as though people feel more comforted by getting this alarmist headline and navigating it on themselves. They don't want the context.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I wonder if they feel more comforted or if they're just drawn inexorably to it, right? I mean, if there's a sense of we have all these things in society where we have a disproportionate sense of the actual threat posed by this particular thing because the headlines gravitate towards these kinds of stories. So child abductions, for instance, which are statistically very, very rare, and it's really one of the last things you should worry about with your kids, are many more threats that are immediately dangerous to them. Car accidents, for instance, much more of a threat. But we don't have national headlines about car accidents, but we do about child abductions because, ironically, because they're unusual and because they're so dramatic. And so we're drawn to those things because they are unusual and dramatic, but they instill in us a sense of kind of a wrong sense of where the actual threats are.
So this is what newspapers say they need to do here, that they're declining, but there's a need for this context more than ever before. Why the decline?
That's the classic kind of gatekeeper's argument, right? And it would be better – we're better off to have people who are able to provide this kind of responsible, contextual case on things. But even with something like swine flu, I mean, the Daily News had this headline, you know, from 2 weeks ago saying, you know, the swine flu spreading like wildfire through the city, when in fact it was pretty much just spreading like the flu. It wasn't spreading in a particularly unusual way, and there had been, you know, no severe cases in the entire city. So – I don't know. That is certainly the argument that the big papers should be providing that kind of context, but they don't necessarily always do it.
You know, there's a term, smart mobs, for you know, people who come together and, you know, crowdsourcing, whether it's online or face to face. Is this kind of, you know, dumb mobs?
Right. Yeah, it could well be. And there's a history to this. I mean, in some ways, the book that you alluded to, The Ghost Map, this cholera outbreak in London, was also really a story about information and about kind of mobs kind of coming together, ordinary people on the street helping to solve this mystery of this outbreak. And information was crucial to that story as well. And you had to kind of detect this pattern in the outbreak and where people were dying in London. And being able to use that information and use it wisely is absolutely essential. And our ability to kind of master more and more information and detect more and more subtle patterns in all that data, we're getting better and better at that, which is great. And that may be the single biggest asset we have against future pandemics when they come along.
Well, but let's talk about just general information flow. And you're someone who lives off the free flow of information that is causing problems for newspapers and books. Yeah. Why is it that headlines and small blurbs are favored on cell phone platforms? It's hard to carry a book around compared with looking at just like the Google News page.
Right.
What's going to change that?
Well, I think what we're seeing actually is some interesting stuff is starting to happen with social services like Twitter, for instance. Whereas Twitter, which we know is the ultimate kind of short messaging system,
yeah,
140 characters, right? But what people are now using it for increasingly is to send links around, right? So it's not just this is what I had for breakfast, but it's here's this really interesting longer story that I read. And it's becoming a major kind of driver of traffic to those longer stories. In fact, I used it all the time on book tour for my last book. So I'm using 140 characters to promote 70,000 words. And so I think we're getting, yes, headlines do flow through that, but people click on those headlines to read the longer articles.
Very quickly, the Kindle was announced as a possible platform for newspapers. Google's putting books in its archive. Is there any future there for long-form contextualized text files like books and newspapers?
There's an incredible data that Amazon has announced about how many people are buying books on the Kindle. I mean, they're seeing far more books purchased per consumer if you have a Kindle. So I think long-format reading may be back in style.
Hopeful news out of the white noise of information. Stephen Johnson's latest book is The Invention of Air. He's also the author of The Ghost Map, the story of London's most terrifying epidemic. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks a lot.